First off, this week's After Dinner speaker is our philosopher on Nights, philosopher at large in the city of Auckland, Anne Kirwan. Kia ora, Anne. Welcome back to Nights.
Kia ora, Brian. Good evening.
You presented the ideas of quite a few contemporary thinkers recently who have been reinterpreting or revisiting ideas from the past. I'm thinking about the series we did on Rebecca Goldstein, Plato at the Googleplex, and also maybe Andre Comte-Sponville and his treatise on virtues. This evening, you've got a thinker from the 21st century, John Carg, but he's revisiting the thoughts of a great American thinker from the late 19th century, William James.
That's right, Brian. We've actually, in our many years discussing philosophy on Nights, we've actually touched on William James in two different conversations over time. But he is a very wide-ranging and sparkling thinker. And so Carg's book, I should say the author's name is John Carg. He's a professor of philosophy, young man, professor of philosophy in University of Massachusetts. And he not only writes about William James, he studied William James for a long time, he inserts himself in the narrative. He's writing a book that he thinks he needed at a certain point in his life and that he still needs. He thinks William James's wide-ranging thinking, and again, we can touch a little bit on James' biography, but James' wide-ranging thinking was medicinal for him. It helped him see life in a different way. And he thinks that he is not alone in an era in which we've, as he says, we've given away superstition, we've given away tradition, and now we're lacking existential meaning.
Yeah.
That we are affluent enough, many of us, and yet we suffer from anxiety and depression, and that many seemingly of our successful people, particularly young people, commit suicide inexplicably. So he thinks that he wants to reinterpret and carry forth some things that are meaningful for him, and in the course he talks about his own life and experience.
The book I think that you're working off is William James' Six Souls,
Healthy Minds,
How William James Can Save Your Life, which seems quite an awful lot to put on one philosopher, no matter how important, he's going to save your life.
Well, interestingly, when I first, so I've read two other books by Carg that I like very much, and I read that title and I said, oh, I'm not going to purchase this book, Save Your Life. You know, this is way self-helpy for me, you know, kind of thing, and a little, you know, exaggerated. And several reviews have said that. But reading the book several times, I have come to the view that it is save your life as in savor your life. And that is, you know how people used to say, get a life? In other words, you're alive.
Yeah.
But do you have a life? And so Carg is looking at some things William James says about be not afraid of life. Mm. And what he meant by that is life, we try to tidy it up. Philosophers do and psychologists do. And he was a psychologist, trained psychologist as well as a philosopher. We tidy it up and we make it clean and we give you all these self-help rules, or James doesn't, but other people do. And you know what? Life is also messy and it's also perplexing and it's also complex and it's also wondrous. And so if we really want to live a life, whatever that means for us, okay, in a sense, it's not just saving existence, you know, that we continue to persist. It is, in a way, opening ourselves on our individual level, because we're not all alike. There is no one recipe. But how, in an interesting way, to think about having a life that suits us.
He published this book, in the last few months, so it's come out during the pandemic. But I assume he wrote it before we knew about
COVID-19. Yes, he did. He was not, unless he's clairvoyant, or his publisher is, this was an accidental release, but a timely one, because although New Zealand acted swiftly and appropriately, and people focused here in the main on sort of a disciplined and communitarian approach, this is not the case everywhere in the world. And many people are still either in shutdown or about ready to go back in. And there has been a great deal of jarring of people's set attitudes toward life, their expectations, their sense of mortality and invulnerability, as well as the potential for economic perturbation. And so it is a reasonable time. People have, some people have taken time to back off and simply say, gosh, I really want to think about life.
And I really don't think even in New Zealand, where we are living relatively a life pretty simple, similar to what we were experiencing before the pandemic, I think everyone, we all feel, well, I speak for myself here, but I don't think I'm alone, that the ground has shifted under our feet. The carpet's been swept from beneath us. Things are not solid. It's not clear where things are going to go. There's a lot of uncertainty around the world, and we can't escape from that.
No, and Cogg didn't put it in those terms because he wasn't writing in those terms, but William James has a wonderful several chapters in a 1,200-page book on Introduction to Psychology on habit, because he thought, as a physiologist and a comparative anatomist, he thought that we were all habit-bound. He said instincts are nothing but the animal's habits. They may have developed them evolutionary over time, and we also create habits and live by habits, and our societies create habits and live by habits. And some of the more practical part of that chapter, after he did the anatomy and physiology and discussion of priming and all these things, which he anticipated way before his time, he began to talk about how we can form more healthy habits and unconventional habits. And then a little bit later, in the next chapter, he talks about the need not to be habit-bound. He says it's too easy to live a life of habits. And we wake up and we go, wait a minute, where did I go? What did I enjoy? Who are my connections? You know, what am I doing? And he talked about genius being the disposition to perceive in unhabitual ways. So for, you know, some of the experiences that people have reported here on their COVID-19 non-traumatic lockdown experiences was, wow, it shook my habits in a good way.
Mm.
I began to see the spaces. And not only does James, you know, he has sort of this contrapuntal in his writings, even in the Principles of Psychology, where he talks about habit and will, setting things in motion and doing that, getting out of meaninglessness. And at the same, right after that, he'll have a chapter on receptivity, which means being open to the flow of experience, to the unexpected, to being able to take some jolts, but also some wonder. And I think this potential loosening up of the tyranny of some of our structures, including overwork, overcommitment, overcommunication, of this day and age, you know, being bound by things unanticipated. A reading of William James, or even Cagg's interpretations of William James. And also be not afraid of life insofar as you can, because it is messy at times, and it is terminal at always. And you don't exactly know what to do, but you've been through the river, the stream of consciousness, over and over.
Now, and so, there's something I wanted to ask you about. I mean, maybe it's perhaps if we could summarize some of the key things that William James said. If he said, be not afraid of life, belief that life is worth living, believe that life is worth living, and belief will help create the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an aphorism that it is easy to relate to. But if you are then saying life can be quite messy and unpredictable, and sometimes you don't want to get tied down by habits, that is creating a quite a degree of uncertainty for folk. And especially when the world is already uncertain enough, how do we move forward with that?
Well, you know, the chapters on will are in that particular book. He wrote a lot of things, and Cagg jumps among the works, which is incredibly appropriate. But one of the things that Cagg points out is again will, that you try to set yourself to a life that is appropriate for you. But also he talks a bit about the experimental method. As a scientist and as a philosopher, he believed that everything was an experiment, really, And when you were trying to figure out what the world was like, you know, in a physical sense, you were making hypotheses and you were formulating predictions, and you had to test it out by experience, and then you had to see what came up, and then you would do it all over again and maybe revise. And he had that same with your approach to living, if you will. Yes, we are uncertain, but that simply is the state right now. Is it not true that things are somewhat uncertain? Maybe they're always uncertain, but we didn't realize that so
yes.
much before. And okay, so how do we roll with that as human beings? How can we respond to that? What experiments can we do with our life to give us some certainty, in our sense, the certainties that we can create, but also not to have such a rigid, formal, cling on to life and my belief with so hands-on that it's unrealistic and brittle and breaks us. You know, the resilient person is able in a bit to roll with uncertainty, hard as it is. It's
what,
a training.
What does William James and what does Keg, yeah. what do they say about judgment? Judgment of others and also judgment of yourself.
Well, in he has a wonderful series of things at the end of, that were part of the principles of psychology, which were talks to teachers and talks to students. And he gave a series of talks about psychology and healthy mindedness to teachers. They're sparkling and brilliant and funny, and you would love them even now. But the talks to students were particularly bright, and he had one that's especially good called The Gospel of Relaxation. And he speaks to young women. He was speaking to women students. Harvard did not admit women students until the late 70s, sometime or in the 70s, 1970s, women students. And he said, you know, you're so wonderful, you're so duty-bound, and you're so responsible, you're carrying the weight of the world and everyone's, and you want to conform to everyone's expectations and be a good girl, and that's what society wants of you. Because this was in about 1900 when the angel of the house, you know, the woman who served everybody and everything, was the ideal of society. And he says, this isn't healthy. You need to find who you are a bit too, and see, be willing to be different if that's what you like, and not be so conventional, and let's think beyond the conventions, and let's relax, and let's look at, be mindful in a way, let's loosen up. So he has that contrapuntal, if you will, which is still a bit relevant for today. Be mindful. He called it receptivity. Don't try to control everything. And yet you must use your will to try to give yourself structure.
Healthy mind. What does William James mean by healthy-mindedness?
Well, he was actually doing a sort of a play on words about healthy bodies. There was in this talks to students, there was a movement in the United States at that time that the women students needed to get healthier with their bodies, and they needed to get into sports. And, you know, women had been kept sort of, as he says it, like tabby cats around the fireplace, and he said, but you know, we're not emphasizing healthy mindedness, which he meant sort of robustness, and a bit thinking for yourself. I mean, his models were like suffragists. You know, that was really his models. You know, don't feel you have to conform, and if you're shy, don't feel you have to conform to being an extrovert. You know, but if you're outgoing, don't feel you have to conform to be, you know, a well-mannered good girl. Have a bit of experimentation. Have a bit of sense of fun. He thought that was healthy-minded.
I didn't realize that William James was the brain behind the phrase stream of consciousness.
He was, yeah.
I thought that was just to do with a writing style.
Well, actually, his brother, Henry James, was a very famous novelist.
Yeah, yes.
And it was Henry James who wrote a piece of criticism that was very influential about stream of consciousness writing style. and the a narrator who was not omniscient. So there was related, but it was his brother who came up, William, who came up with that in the Principles of Psychology. You know, as scientists, everyone dissected things, and as early psychologists and philosophers over time, they had this view of the mind that we were sort of like this little logical machine, Brian. You know, we saw the world cleanly and plainly and logically and lucidly, and, you know, we were just this beautiful, beautiful, I don't know, iPad or something. And William James said, you know, you're not talking about the mind within. You're not talking about how humans experience their mind. We are a stream of consciousness, and emotions are part of it. And so we can be confused, and we can have feelings, and we can be distracted, and we can be perplexed, and we can be very clear, and we can be very focused, and we can be very nervous. And, you know, and so that is how we function. And he was quite stunning. Like he used the analogy of a bird. It's like the bird. We have our little perchings, and then we have our flights, and then we're down again.
Finally then, because we've got about 3 minutes here, and if one finds oneself with a stream of consciousness that is a bit like a tumbling rapid or confusion and is looking around at an uncertain world and thinking that embracing uncertainty is a bit like jumping into the abyss, then what's the advice from William James and John Keg?
Well, I don't know if they would say that if the uncertainty is totally freaking you out, that you need to embrace it. That's probably a little, you know, maybe that's for the existentialist or something. But accept that you have been in some uncertainty in some sense your whole life. Some people, because he did talk about certain temperaments, some people do embrace it. They love the uncertainty. If they thought that they were anything was fixed or too much was fixed, you know, that wouldn't be dramatic.
And they need to run.
Yeah, there need to be, you know, it needs to have some spark. Other people temperamentally are not so suited to that. But certainly for him, for us to pretend that in human history, even in recent human history, much of the inhabitants of the earth have experienced considerable uncertainty. And maybe we are a little more padded and a little more sheltered, but still, as a human being, it is part of our fate, as well as our ability to create meaning. And he was very big on creating meaningful associations with other human beings and try to better the community. That is always a focus.
I don't know if this is William James or not saying this, but talking about the willingness to open our eyes to attend to life as it flows beyond our own skull-sized kingdoms.
That's right. Yeah, that phrase, skull-sized kingdom, is from David Foster Wallace.
Ah.
But, that indeed. So we are aware of our own stream of consciousness, but we also live and are bound to others. So even in uncertainty, sometimes we wallow in uncertainty because we feel we're alone. But if we reach out and try to help other people and bond with other people and care about other people and they care about us, there is, in some sense, a web that we are weaving that goes beyond the minute and the hour and the day and the crisis.
And thank you very much for joining us again.
Always a pleasure, Brian.
That's Anne Kirwan, philosopher in large in the city of Auckland, and our philosopher on nights, back with more thoughts on thinking and living in about 10 weeks. By the way, the book she's talking about there, Sick Souls, Healthy Minds, How William James Can Save Your Life, is by John Keg. That's Keg, spelled K. AAG. It was published a few months ago by Princeton University Press.